Back together again, you and I, for a Tuesday, April 26th, 2022 edition of Connecticut Today right here on WICC. I had to poke a little fun, actually, the current panic over Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter and how about half the country is freaking out over the whole thing. Quinnipiac University business journalism professor Sarah Silver joined us in the show to analyze the past and present actions of Elon Musk. Yankee Institute reporter Mark Fitch talked about a piece he recently authored on the continuing preparations for legal marijuana sales in Connecticut. I have to laugh, you know, I told you yesterday this was going to start, and it started ramping up yesterday, and now we're kind of a day into it. And by it, I mean the collective, the outrage. You've got crying towels out. You've got pearls out there to be clutched. You've got people weeping, a lot of Hollywood types, a lot of folks, left-wing types. Oh, my God, what did I tell you? The group shuddering of fear now that Elon Musk has bought Twitter. Oh, my God, you would think the world is ending. Everybody's on Twitter today saying, well, I may just have to leave the platform. Okay, leave. Leave. I may have to leave Twitter. Okay, well, then leave. The world will go on. World markets won't care. You know, actor, comedian, producer Rob Reiner said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I may have to leave. Go, Meathead, go. Go, Meathead, go. Run, Meathead, run. Oh, that's an old All in the Family joke, I'm sure. Most of you people in my audience get that. But, oh, my God. Has this turned into a lesson of self-importance here? Well, what will my Twitter followers do? Geez, I don't know. They may have to get a life. They may have to call mom or grandma every so often, see how they are, instead of worrying what you losers tweet. Oh, my God. Who cares? It's now his company. He can do with whatever he wants with Twitter. That's the beauty of America. Anybody who forks up, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, anybody who forks up $44 billion, not million, $44 billion with a B, dollars, to run anything and keep people employed should be congratulated. Even Jack Dorsey, the guy that used to run Twitter, said, yeah, you know, Musk is probably going to be good for the company. But, oh, my God, he's going to destroy democracy. Yeah, the world is going to end. America is going to end. The EU is done. This is all going to end because Elon Musk owns Twitter. You people, calm down. Oh, my God. As I say on this and a lot of other issues, kids, we have lost all proportion. Everything now is the end of the freaking world. Would you please just relax? Relax. It's a social media platform. It's not an armed army. It's not a nuclear bomb. If you don't like what's said on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or, you know, TikTok, WeChat, WhatsApp, then leave. Then don't use it. And you know what this is indicative of, really? It's indicative of one of the evils of social media. And listen, everybody falls into it. You know, I post stuff on my social media accounts that my friends enjoy. They laugh. They get a giggle out of. We commiserate about stuff. But a lot of people, especially those who use Twitter and other platforms, I honestly think that one thing social media does to hurt us here is to, I understand its influence, but is to, in a roundabout way, overinflate people's egos. Well, my followers want to know what I think. Well, maybe. Of course, then again, for every follower you have, there are 10 or 15 or 20 people who don't care. By the way, our Facebook question of the day, facebook.com/WICC600. Now that Elon Musk has bought Twitter, should, and here's the big question, and apparently he says no up front, but you never know, should former President Donald Trump be allowed back on the platform? How about that, huh? I got some answers in there already. You let me know, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, again, You know, we've talked about this ad nauseum here, but sometimes people need to be reminded, you know, these are not government platforms. These are not platforms controlled, at least outwardly, by politicians or the courts or whatever. So, you know, private companies like Twitter and TikTok and Facebook and everything, yeah, they can, if they want to, they can go ahead and ban people. Right? They can go ahead and ban people. They can do that. And Donald Trump was pulled off Twitter, and we all know that, and he's trying to do his own social media platform called Truth, I believe it's called, one word, Truth. Had a little bit of a rough startup. Not a lot of people went on there thinking he'd be reinstated to Twitter. So what do you think of that, about that? Should Donald Trump be allowed back on Twitter? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Right here, it's Tuesday, Connecticut Today. You let me know, or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WICC600. Now that Elon Musk has bought Twitter, should former President Trump be allowed back on the platform? I love Musk. I really do. Because he's a little crazy. He's a little nuts. And we need that now in society. We need that, honestly. Elon Musk is one of these guys. I said I've compared him to Howard Hughes a lot. And those of you who are old enough, you have to be a little older to remember Howard Hughes and his style with his movies and his airplanes and his technical stuff. And little aloof, living in Vegas, and there's all this rumored stuff over the years about his will and everything, and did the real Howard Hughes die and all that, whatever. But America was fascinated with Hughes because he was just a little bit this side of nuts. Brilliant guy, but he didn't really conform to a lot of stuff. And you can call that sociopathic tendencies. Maybe, maybe yes, maybe no. I think Musk is like that. And I just love, I am, you have no idea how happy I am that people are going nuts. Not, but some, not all. But my God, the typical, I mean, you would have thought. I was reading the New York Times online yesterday and today about this. You would think that Elon Musk now has a nuclear weapon. I mean, the far left in this country. Oh, my God. And you know what? They complain about the left, the right-wing rhetoric on Twitter. They never talk about the left-wing nuts on Twitter, many of whom are not even nearly banned. Many of whom, you know, espouse equally sometimes quote-unquote dangerous stuff like crazy border security proposals, crazy stuff about what we should teach our kids, yet all they can be afraid of is if Donald Trump would ever be allowed back on Twitter. Who cares? Who cares? Honestly, live your lives. Talk to grandma. Call grandpa. Take a walk. Go to the library. Breathe in the fresh air. It's good for you, instead of being paranoid about what people say on Twitter, for God's sake. But oh my God. Now we're going to talk about this a little later on with an expert, but what do you think? And again, the big question here, should Elon Musk allow former President Donald Trump to be back on the Twitter platform? And I tell you, one thing Mr. Trump did, whether you like it or not, and believe me, there are people on the other side who hated Trump, but you don't understand. Don't bet that they didn't marvel at this, at the way he was able to use the social platform to maneuver and get around the D.C. press corps. That is what frosts people off about Twitter a lot, especially those on the left pointed toward Republicans. Oh, my God, they have all these Twitter followers. Yeah, and listen. You either have it or you don't. You either have it or you don't. But what do you think? Should Elon Musk allow former President Donald Trump to be back on the Twitter platform? A lot of folks still discussing this whole Twitter thing, want to bring it into more of a perspective here from a couple of angles. Sarah Silber joins us. Sarah is the Allen Abelson Endowed Professor of Business and Journalism and Financial Communication at Quinnipiac University to talk about that. Professor Silber, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much. Boy, this can be dissected, Professor, from so many different angles here. The societal angle, the business angle, the pop culture angle. Let's talk about the way this has been covered and the whole business angle of this. Did this surprise you? Did you see this coming? Were we given enough forewarning of this by the way this has been covered in the business media? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you. This is a weird deal. But a lot of what Elon Musk does is sort of done in this way, where he gets an idea and sort of springs it on the world. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It doesn't make a huge amount of economic sense. Twitter is a struggling company that's been unprofitable. It hasn't made any money for the last 2 years, and I think it's only made money in two of the last five. So Elon Musk says he isn't doing this for economic reasons, and I believe him.
You know, I was talking about this, Professor, for the past couple of days. You mentioned it, too, when you're leading there. Elon Musk, to me, and he doesn't rub everybody this way, but you're right, he's kind of marches to his own drummer. He's just a little on this side of crazy. You know what I mean? He definitely wouldn't fit in on Wall Street, would he? He's a little nuts, I think, in a good way.
He fits in very well in Silicon Valley, and he's done quite well. He's made himself the world's richest man by making people believe in his myth. He's the man who sends rockets to space. He's the man who has shifted the whole auto industry to electric vehicles. But again, that doesn't mean that he can do things profitably. Tesla is doing very well at the moment, and it's made a total of $6 billion in profit in its whole life. The stock of Tesla is worth $1 trillion.
Wow.
So there's a lot of expectations about Tesla. The company is worth more than all the automakers you can name combined. And I just don't think that that's the way the industry is going to play out. Ultimately, the winners of the next generation of cars, electric cars, are going to be the companies that have the best battery technology and the most efficient manufacturing. And Tesla has proven that it can make sedans for $45,000 and crossovers for people who can pay more than $100,000. But that is in no way the majority of the auto market.
Professor Sarah,
I wouldn't discount the Toyotas of the world, the Hondas. Even Ford beat Tesla to market with an electric truck.
That's interesting. You're right. Professor, hang on. We're going to be back with more. We'll take a break here. Professor Sarah Silver from Quinnipiac University is the guest, talking a little bit more in detail about the purchase by Elon Musk of Twitter. Traffic and weather together, then more with Professor Silver coming up. This is WICC. Quinnipiac University Business Journalism Professor Sarah Silver for a few more minutes on this whole scenario with Elon Musk, who kind of marches to his own drummer, but wouldn't we love to all do that? And his purchase of Tesla for, what, $43-44 billion. You know, Professor, if this happened 20 or 30 years ago, I can remember kind of when this stuff happened, but boy, you didn't have all of the media outlets today, you know, CNBC, CNN to a great deal, Fox, MSNBC, everybody trying to peel back layers of this. What does this mean? Years ago, this stuff kind of happened, obviously not in social media, but boy, is there a better example over the past two or three days of how we have these multiple outlets now, journalistic outlets, trying to peel back the layers and come up with the angle on it. It really is fascinating.
Yeah, it's a pile on, to be sure.
Yeah.
It does make you wish that people would be writing and talking about other things, because this is not the most important news out there. There's a lot of issues that shouldn't be covered. And I also wish that people would do a better job of looking at the numbers. You know, Twitter is not a profitable company. Tesla makes a very small amount of profit. And Elon Musk says this isn't about money. It's about something else. Well, in some ways, yes. But I think the Twitter purchase has a lot more to do with maintaining Tesla's value, right? It's much more important to Elon Musk to maintain that $1 trillion valuation of Tesla than it is for him to eke out $1 billion in profit from Twitter.
But it's interesting, though, that
is essential to his brand.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, Professor, isn't it, that I believe Mr. Musk has said, or did he not say, well, this is in no way going to be connected to Tesla? Didn't he say, hey, this is my own personal wealth, and I'm going to keep them separate? But you don't think that's actually in the cards here, or his motive is different here? Interesting.
Well, his personal wealth comes from the valuation of Tesla stock, and he's taking out loans using his Tesla stock as collateral to make this purchase. He spoke last week at a TED Talks, and he talked about his battle with the SEC. One of the ways that Elon Musk creates this brand is on Tesla. And one of the things that is required when you sell stock to the public is that you can't lie to investors. And yes, he's taking Twitter private now through this deal if it goes through. But a few years ago, he tried to take, or claimed that he was going to take, Tesla public. He claimed that he had money from the Saudis to take it public, and issued that tweet that said, financing secured, that sent the shares soaring, and it wasn't true. And no one forces the world's richest man to take money from other people, right, to sell stock. But once you do, you have to abide by the rules. And it was the SEC's job to clamp down on him. And he talked last week and in this interview in the TED Talks about how this was an existential threat to his company, that his company was going to be put out of business if he didn't stop tweeting these things. And it's just this inability to abide by rules. Part of that is undoubtedly why he's so successful. But, you know, if he wants to do whatever he wants, then he should do what he's doing with Twitter and take it private. But you can't do with you can't just take other people's money and then do whatever you want with it.
So having said all that, Professor, does the business journalism community cover him properly? Are they too swayed maybe by the image, by the caricature of Elon Musk, or not? Or do they do a good job, do you think?
I think it's a real problem in business journalism that we're so focused on a few celebrity executives. Business journalism the worlds of money and power are super interesting and super, super varied. But it's the tendency to cover celebrities that plagues all of the media. It draws eyeballs. It draws readers. It draws clicks. Elon Musk has been tremendously influential. So has Twitter. But influence doesn't match economic importance always. And it's the job of business journalists to sort of get behind this and poke around in the numbers and see what's really happening. And I wish that would happen more.
You know, Professor, I said this the other day. Don't know whether you would agree, but I tried to think back of in the coverage of these business people over the years and going back a bunch of decades. The image that comes up to me, Professor, is the late Howard Hughes. I mean, here was a guy who was, you know, a movie producer, and he was maniacal about his airline business and the Spruce Goose, and then, you know, built these transatlantic telephone lines, cables, because he foresaw the day where you'd have coast-to-coast television sports, the Hughes Television Network and all that. I don't know. Maybe there are others, but to me, he's almost kind of a modern-day Howard Hughes. And again, Hughes was a guy who, again, drew kind of the same fanatical coverage.
Yeah, and had the same personality quirks, right? Very, very interesting, very strange character. A little closer to, a little more recent and a little closer to Connecticut, Jack Welch.
Sure.
Right? Neutron Jack,
yes.
Who just couldn't do anything wrong. And it turned out after he left that, right, it was a myth, right? GE was not the juggernaut that people thought. He you know, it was left to the people who followed him to sort of clean up. And today you hear recruiting ads for GE struggling to compete for engineering graduates with Silicon Valley. You know, there just needs to be more scrutiny.
Absolutely. Professor Sarah Silver is the Allen Abelson Endowed Professor of Business Journalism and Financial Communication at Quinnipiac University. Professor, thank you. Great stuff. We appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we can hook up down the road. Thanks.
Be well.
Professor Sarah Silver from Quinnipiac University. Yeah, I forgot about Jack Welch. Yeah, she's right. I was trying to think of somebody in the recent, not too distant past, and yeah, Jack Welch, good pickup there. Professor Sarah Silver, Quinnipiac University. Our buddy, our pal Mark Fitch from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy in Connecticut, the Democrats' favorite website. They say, Mark, you guys continue to be funded by by vast, shadowy, I think they use, right-wing conspiracies. And if that's it, damn it, so be it. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well, Paul, and I'm glad to be here with you, because I don't know if you saw, but we actually launched a new journalism website that I am running with a partner.
Yes, I want to talk about that first before we get to a piece you did on the marijuana licensing. So it's good to see this, Mark, another one of these, you know, dedicated sites in the state that don't come from the big newspapers that concentrate on state issues. So what's the name of the site? Tell the folks, and what can they find when they get there?
This is we launched the Connecticut Inside Investigator, and you can see it at insideinvestigator.org. And we're going to be focusing largely on investigative journalism, but also doing news of the day. So, you know, myself and a couple other reporters will, as news happens during the day, we do, you know, pieces to keep everybody kind of up to date. But really, our focus is on more in-depth individual human-focused journalism and investigative pieces.
And Mark, this is great because, you know, there are other sites out there. There's the News Junkie, which we all respect, and the Connecticut Mirror. And I guess what these are termed, you know, I don't know whether the term is still applicable, but these micro sites, I think it's great that, you know, we know the newspapers aren't doing that well, Mark, anymore. And a lot of times it's all they can do to cover the real breaking news, the shootings and stuff like that. So I applaud you guys who are starting another one of these sites that can really take a deeper look into some of the big stories here, because, you know, Mark, frankly, you know, the manpower at some of these other news operations is just not there.
Well, yeah, and it's difficult, even, you know, and we have a smaller crew than, you know, those major newspapers, but we've got a really good team here, and we're run separately from Yankee Institute. We're funded by them, but you know, Yankee Institute can focus on its legislative goals, and we're going to focus on reporting what, you know, people need to hear and how these policies actually affect people on the ground. So we're very excited to have it up and running now.
All right, Mark, hang on. We'll be right back with you. More with Mark Fitch coming up. I'm going to ask Mark to talk about a piece he did, I think about 4 or 5 days ago, that's up at Yankee Institute regarding the ongoing licensing process that is undergoing for marijuana retailers. Is that becoming difficult? There was controversy about the lottery process. When are we really going to see these marijuana retail outlets come to fruition? More with Mark Fitch coming up first at Traffic and Weather Together right here, WICC. And our buddy, our pal Mark Fitch from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy is with us, but they have now started an investigative and breaking news site, insideinvestigator.org. And what are the stories there? And I've been wondering about this because I'm reading about startups in other states and now problems they've been dealing with, you know, too many taxes in California. A lot of advocates in California say minority licenses aren't being given up. Massachusetts has some problems, too. At insideinvestigator.org, Mark's story, Getting High from the Ground Up, Cannabis Entrepreneurs Try to Navigate Connecticut's Red Tape. Mark, what did you find out on this whole thing? I mean, I know they're saying late in the year for retail sales to begin, and I've read your piece and other pieces here saying, I don't know, but tell us about what's going on here in the application process.
Well, yeah, it really depends, because if you're one of the, you know, big medical marijuana producers, you know, these larger companies, I mean, they could flip a switch and put in the money and have a retail operation up and going pretty quickly. But if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a startup, if you're one of the social equity applicants from, you know, a number of different areas in the state, it's obviously going to take you a little longer. And no matter how much work you put into your application, you are subject to a lottery. So essentially, you get all your ducks in a row and submit your application to the Social Equity Council, and then it goes into a lottery system to see if you are one of the applicants who can move forward with creating a retail business. And so that's kind of a big hurdle, because you're putting in a lot of work and not knowing whether or not your work is actually going to pay off, because you might not get a license. And so what I did is I followed along to startup entrepreneurs to see, you know, the challenges they face, see what they thought about the process. And, you know, it's a lot to jump through. It's a new industry for the state of Connecticut. And I think in trying to create, you know, they really wanted to create a lot of social equity so that minority groups who had been, you know, previously harmed by marijuana laws would be able to kind of jump into this market. And what I think ended up happening was they created such a complicated system that it actually works the opposite. It works in the opposite direction now, you know, so they overcomplicated it, and it ends up creating more hurdles than most people can jump over. It's not like, you know, it's not like going out and opening a liquor store, but even though marijuana is technically legal now,
yeah,
the hoops that you have to jump through to actually open a business is daunting.
Yeah, and Mark, I remember seeing another piece, I don't think it was from you folks, but a couple of months back where, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the things that some of these activists and some people are kind of like having an oh wow moment about here is essentially in this lottery process, bigger companies, bigger firms can put in like multiple entries to this lottery, and basically it's like we used to vote for the old baseball all-star game. Hey, fill out 1,000 ballots with your favorite player. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I read where there was, you know, some consternation about that, the big companies can fill in these applications multiple times. And as you say, it's a tough application for a lone person to do once.
Yeah, and the companies can partner with social equity applicants, which ends up lowering their fee by, I think, $1.5 million or something like that. And they can take on multiple social equity partners. So they not only can get a general like retail license, but can also, through these partnerships, secure a lot of these smaller social equity licenses as well. So, you know, on one hand, you could see it as like, hey, you know, if I partner with this big company, I'll get access to a lot of resources that I wouldn't have otherwise. On the other hand, you could look at it and say, well, it's really just a way for this big company to kind of monopolize the market. And that's where a lot of the cannabis activists have a big problem with this, in that they see the law as it currently stands as benefiting these kind of big corporate entities, as opposed to the mom and pop people who are just trying to build from the ground up, like the individuals I interviewed for this article, who, you know, are, you know, great hardworking people and have a great vision, but are left in limbo waiting to see if their vision can become a reality.
And Mark, I would also assume that you need capital for this. I mean, you know, and that was one of the things I'd always pointed out in this and said, hey, all these grand equity ideas are great, but if this is a business, you need business capital. Where's that coming from?
Well, I mean, if you're of the ability, you can supply it yourself. But even under the social equity application, it's, you know, a lot of money. One of the people I interviewed, Tiana Hercules, you know, she had discussed opening her place with some consultants that specialize in retail marijuana. And that was that would cost her $125,000. And she didn't have that lying around. Mm-hmm. Very few people do. And so you can also try to get people to invest in your idea. But one of the problems is that if you're a social equity applicant, you have to maintain a minimum 65% stake in your business. So if you're asking someone to buy into your idea, they're only going to be able to have at most 35% stake in your business. And so that can be kind of limiting, because who's going to put up $1 million if you're only going to get a 35% share? That can be a little limiting. And then once your application is in, you can't add any more investors. That's it. Hmm. So, you know, if you're going in, if you submit your application, you've got two co-investors, that's all you're going to have in order to maintain your social equity status. So there are some legitimate hurdles there. And, you know, this is a big bill. I mean, it was 300 pages long. It is complicated. And the regulations around marijuana are complicated. You have to track it from seed to sale. You have to have, and not only that, but I was just watching, you know, the House of Representatives today, where they passed a law that restricts where you can advertise and how you can advertise. There's a lot of regulations around this product. So it's quote unquote legal, but, you know, it's not legal in the sense that a lot of other things are legal.
So the magic question here, Mark, finally is, you know, is it possible for, now you said the big companies can do it. Yeah, they can throw money, set up a storefront, buy from a wholesaler, and they're good to go toward the end of the year. Is it conceivable that some of these equity applicants can be, you know, up and running in another 7 or 8 months?
Well, I mean, you know, so I interviewed Luis Vega, who runs WAFA Farms in North Haven, and he manufactures hemp. He's another one. I mean, he built this hemp farm, you know, from the ground up, but he could do it. You know, like he could be up and running in time if he got a social equity license, because he already has the infrastructure there to do it. Tiana, on the other hand, I believe Tiana could probably do whatever she wants to do when she puts her mind to it, mm-hmm. but it's going to be tough. I mean, she has a retail space that she has a letter of intent to lease if she gets her license, but that whole interior has to be renovated. You have to get people in the door. You have to get construction, all this stuff. You have to get the product in the door. It'll be tough. You know, it's not an easy thing to start up in. But there's also, you know, once she has the license, she has it, so she can essentially take her time. But, you know, everybody kind of wants to get their foot in the door first so they can become, you know, the go-to place. So, yeah, it's going to be tough, and there's a lot of hoops to jump through. So hopefully we'll see some of these social equity applicants, you know, do well and you know, get their places up and running. But I'm not going to lie to you. It's nothing that I would personally undertake, because I don't think I could balance all that.
Me
at the
neither.
Same time.
I'm too afraid. Are you kidding me? I sweat over $10. Mark, great stuff, folks. Check out the new website, InsideInvestigator.org. Mark Fitch's story there. Read about these two entrepreneurs that he talked to that are looking for a social equity license to get in the retail marijuana business. Mark, good to talk with you. Mark Fitch, Yankee Institute. Mark, take care. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Check it out, folks, insideinvestigator.org. It's an interesting story. Couple of folks who have the get-go and the will to do it. Tiana Hercules, who was also interviewed by Mark Fitch, and another gentleman, Luis Vega, looking to get into it. And Luis Vega, like Mark says, already grows hemp. And Tiana also has a farm as well.